Support for this program is provided by WORT's listener sponsors and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 2304. Local 2304 is a small local union with a big agenda, bringing power to the people by representing the workers who provide safe and reliable gas and electric service at MG&E. The professional union reps at Madison Teachers Incorporated, the field organizers and canvassers at For Our Future, and the staff collective right here at WORT. More information about the union is available on their website at ibew2304.com.
Standoff. Dozens of students have been detained, some reportedly injured. The BBC's Emma Vardy is there.
A massive police operation was put into motion with officers surrounding the protesters in the UCLA campment on all sides. Police are firing flashbang grenades. The bright lights and loud noises meant to disorientate protesters as police move in to clear tents. Some protesters have thrown fireworks in response. Protesters say rubber bullets have been used against them. Activists with megaphones inside the encampment have been shouting instructions to each other, warning people to put on goggles and headgear. Classes were cancelled all day on campus yesterday, and today classes will be held online.
The President of the EU Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, has announced that the EU will provide Lebanon with a financial package worth €1 billion until 2027. Speaking in Beirut, she said much of the money would help support the country's armed forces with equipment and training for border management. Mike Thompson reports.
This €1 billion financial package will provide a much-needed shot in the arm for Lebanon. Its economy has been in free fall since 2019, and 80% of its people live in poverty. The European Commission president said the cash would support Lebanon's faltering health and education services, as well as its police and armed forces, though she insisted financial and banking reforms are required. Some of the money will also be directed at helping Lebanon cope with its large number of Syrian refugees, an issue causing growing internal friction.
An international police operation by Europol has uncovered one of the largest networks of fraudulent call centres across Europe and beyond. The EU's law enforcement agency said officers in six countries raided and shut down 12 call centres in April. They arrested more than 20 people as part of what's been dubbed Operation Pandora, which identified 39 suspects. For the first time in Kenya, a woman has been appointed as head of the Air Force. The appointment comes as part of a series of military appointments following a helicopter crash that killed the country's defence chief. Our Africa regional editor Will Ross reports.
Major General Fatima Gaiti Ahmed has been in the Kenyan military since 1983, a time when the country had a women's service corps. That limited the potential for women to rise to senior ranks. It was abolished in 1999. Since then, Fatima Gaiti Ahmed has achieved many firsts. She was the first woman in Kenya to become a brigadier, and she also paved the way when reaching the rank of Major General. And now she's head of the Air Force. In interviews, she's spoken with pride about being a role model.
World News from the BBC.
Attention WORT volunteers and donors. WORT is holding an election for two open participating member seats and one open listener sponsor seat to serve three-year terms on the board of directors of Back Porch Radio Broadcasting, Inc., with terms beginning at the annual meeting in June and concluding at the annual meeting in June 2027. Financial acumen, computer literacy, and a willingness to work within a dynamic group to help shape this great station are all desirable qualifications. People of underrepresented groups are strongly encouraged to apply. Some committee hours are required outside of board meetings. Applications must be received by 5 p.m. on Wednesday, May 15th to ensure consideration. Voting begins Thursday, May 30th and continues until the annual meeting on Sunday, June 30th. More information and board applications are available at WORTFM.org or on paper in the station lobby. Help us keep WORT a vibrant and important part of our community. Apply today.
Do you care about workers and labor issues? Do you want to make a difference in our community for working people? Then join the Labor Radio team. Labor Radio is a weekly show that covers labor, social justice, and political issues that impact workers. And we need your help. As a Labor Radio volunteer, you will have the opportunity to report on important labor and social justice stories in your community, interview workers, activists, and experts, produce and edit your own stories. No prior experience is necessary, though a connection with labor is a plus. We will provide training and support. All you need is a passion for worker justice and a desire to amplify the voices of working people. To learn more, contact Volunteer Coordinator Adrian Rainey at 608-321-9583 or head online to WORTFM.org/volunteer to fill out an application. Labor Radio, a voice for workers.
I feel lucky.
Wartstock is coming to Warner Park on Sunday, May 19th, and we're holding a raffle with some great prizes. Winners will take home one of five Summer Music Festival weekend passes, and we've added dinner for six with tequila tastings at Migrants, worth over $700, a pair of season passes to Forward Theater, stays from Marquette and Ruby Marie Hotels, and a crystal and onyx necklace from Goodman's Jewelers. Gift certificates from Sardine, Orange Tree Imports, 10 Pin Alleys, and much, much more. Plus, merch from Wine and Hop Shop, and of course, some great wart swag. Tickets are $3 each, 2 for 5 and 5 for 10. Drawing is at 5 p.m. at Wartstock, but you do not need to be present to win. Tickets are available at upcoming wart events or at the station. A complete list of prizes is on our website at wartfm.org. Good luck.
I feel lucky today.
Look at that, Eli. Everything's working. Just like clockwork. Like we always do.
A lot of people don't know this, but that one, that was actually me singing the Buzz theme right there.
That was.
Yeah.
I've gotten
a lot better at it. Yeah.
That's really good. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a useful skill.
It works. Good morning, everyone. Today's Thursday, May 2nd, 2024. My name's Tony Castaneda, and it's time for the Thursday, May 2nd, 2024 edition. I'm going to say it again of the 8 o'clock buzz. Joined in the studio here by Eli. Eli, how come I can't hear you?
I wasn't talking.
Can
you hear me
thanks.
Now?
Yes.
Good.
How's it going?
I'm doing good, man. Good. I don't know if you've been outside lately. It's lovely.
It is.
Nice. I've got some a friend in town from Chicago who's doing a bunch of comedy in town, so hanging out with buddies all week.
You got some big shows going on tonight. You got a big one at our Working Draft, right?
Yeah, I do. Comedy at Working Draft is tonight. It's 7:30. It's a free show. Come stop by. We got a bunch of the best comics in Madison on the lineup, including my buddy Ryan Kushner coming up from Chicago.
Wow. So, all right.
Craig Smith, Kayla Ruth, and yours truly.
All right. Sounds like a good time. There's a little bit of self-promotion. By the way, here's your pay. Here's your zucchini bread, sir.
Oh, yeah.
And I got to tell you about these bananas, because lately there have not been any ripe bananas.
So what's going on? Where'd you get this one?
Well, they got this little basket as you walk in.
Are you stealing from
like
the children?
For the kids.
You're stealing
it's
from
like,
the children again,
you gotta
Tony.
Cry, baby, sore loser. Baby that's crying. Take one of these, and so I pay for it. Though.
Okay, yeah.
But those are free to kids.
Yeah, so yeah,
If I was under four, I would get it for free for you.
Yeah, but you're making these kids eat unripe bananas now.
They got to eat the apples. Still, there's other fruit in there for them to eat.
Okay, good.
So, like,
I've been
it's a secret thing.
I've been turning these into smoothies, so it's all right. I just go home and grind it up.
Well, I'm glad to hear you doing that.
Yeah.
On today's show, everybody, we're going to be speaking with hopefully Dalia Saba, and she's with Students for Justice in Palestine. She's a part of the encampment that's going on at the Library Mall right now as we speak. And We're also going to be speaking with our good friend Melissa Smith, Friends of Wisconsin Wolves. Well, looks like the Republicans, Eli, looks like they're going to try to delist Gray Wolves.
I saw that they voted on that to try to make the Wolves able to
dead
be
or something.
Killed again.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the Wolves really don't have anything to say about it.
I don't
think.
Do the Wolves get a vote? That's what I'm worried. You know,
they should.
I guess they should. You're right, Tony.
Okay.
Yeah, that's real democracy.
And we're also going to be speaking with our good friend Lily Lux today. And she's got, like she said, she's got a very important announcement. So we'll find out what that is. Thank you very much for tuning in, everyone. In a minute, we're going to be speaking with Dahlia Saba. It's 8:12 a.m. You are tuned into WRT 89.9 FM in Madison, Wisconsin. Joining me on the phone, I'm very pleased to have Dahlia Saba. She is with Students for Justice in Palestine. She has been involved with the encampment that's going on right now at the Library Mall. It's been going on since Monday. Dahlia, thank you very much for being on. Can you tell me a little bit about what's happening down there? Give me a live report.
Yeah, thanks for having me. So I'm out here right now. We are doing some, you know, we're having our breakfast, we're having our coffee. We have a good number of people out here today. And we are preparing to head to have some student representatives meet with the chancellor this morning to discuss how we can move forward with our demands.
Now, I know the chancellor, her initial reaction to everything was like, If the students take down the encampment, then we will sit down and meet with them. First of all, what did you think about that approach that the chancellor took at that time?
I mean, I think it's, to me, it feels like kind of a joke because of the fact that we have been asking for months now for the university to, or really for years, actually, for the university to divest from companies, you know, complicit in the occupation, the apartheid law in Israel, and in the land grabs of Palestine. So we've been asking for years for the university to divest. The university has consistently ignored us, silenced us, and done their best just not to listen to us, particularly over the last 6 months. And so now we see that they only start to take us seriously once we put up these tents. And so for them to say, well, we won't talk to you until you take down the tent, just really goes to show that they're doing their best to ignore the students rather than talk to them in good faith.
All right. Now, what about the relationship between what you guys are doing here in UW-Madison and what's going on nationwide and even beyond our country's borders? Is there what is the connection with that movement? Is there are you guys actually talking to each other?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're directly inspired by, and we have, you know, we take advice, we take lessons from organizers at other universities. I think the connection here broadly is that the role of higher education should be to provide, you know, an education that benefits the world. But instead, what we see is that so many of these universities are essentially investment managers with an educational arm attached. And those investment managers, you know, for example, the UW Foundation, invest in companies that are, that profit off of war, that profit off of genocide, that profit off of colonization. And that is why we are out here today in Madison. And that's why students are out here in, you know, all of these universities across the U.S. and, you know, beyond, as you mentioned, because it is really unacceptable that our institutions are profiting off of the horror being inflicted upon the Palestinian people.
What about Republican response? Of course, we're hearing them chiming in now, Robin Foss especially, asking for these things to be shut down and also accusing these encampments as and the participants as being anti-Semitic. Can you respond to what Republicans are saying? And yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that clearly goes to show that they have not, like, seen what these encampments are. You know, this is something that has been co-organized by Jewish students both at Madison and also across the country. This is not something that is separate from Jewish students. I also want to say that, like, you know, for Jewish students who, you know, maybe were raised with Zionism or want to learn more about why people are protesting for Palestine, we are willing to have those conversations in good faith with people who want to learn more. And we have had those conversations at UW-Madison. So I think these sneers are really, again, another way for lawmakers, for administrators, for the broader public to ignore the underlying message of these protests, which is that there is a genocide happening in Gaza, and our universities, our institutions of higher learning are complicit in that.
Okay, now the semester is ending very soon here. What's going to happen when a lot of the students are gone? What type of a presence or what type of actions do you think will continue?
I can't speak to the specifics of what will happen after the end of the semester, but based on what I've seen out here over the past few days, this is something that many people, many students, many faculty, many community members, many staff feel very passionately about. And this is not something that will just go away after the end of the semester. This is something that we're committed to fighting for, both in the short term and in the long term. So I wouldn't expect the end of a semester to silence these demands.
Speaking with Dalia Saba, Dalia, you've been on the show before, and if we could go back a little bit to actually what is going on in Gaza and in Palestine right now. What can you update us on what's happening?
Yeah, so I think right now we have seen that the situation is again only getting worse and worse. We have mass starvation happening in the north of Gaza. We also have seen, as you know, many people have had their homes destroyed and have been warned of increasing, you know, and as the north was invaded first, many people have evacuated to the south. Many people are, living in Rafah right now. I think over 1 million people, sheltering in tents, trying to, you know, tents without heating, without air conditioning, as the temperatures get to, you know, 100 degrees, living without access to water, access to bathrooms, access to electricity generally. And now we hear Israel doubling down on its threat to invade Rafah. Mm-hmm. At the same time, we see that our elected officials, including Joe Biden and Tammy Baldwin, have voted to send an additional $17 billion in military aid to Israel. Mm-hmm. You know, beyond the wishes of the tens of thousands of Wisconsin voters who specifically voted uninstructed in our primary to demand that they stop sending further aid to Israel.
Dali, can you talk a little bit to our listening audience, other people in the community, of course. The mayor of New York has called people that are involved in the actions in the support of the Palestinian people at Columbia University and other universities there, is blaming it on outsiders. What about the community, the rest of the community here in Madison, many people who would like to come and also show support for what you guys are trying to do down there? What role can they play? What would you like people who are not students, what can the community do that's beneficial?
I mean, I think, first, this is a student-run protest. This is something that has been organized by students and represents the wills of students. But I want to reject that distinction between the students and the community because, you know, at UW-Madison, we theoretically have this thing called the Wisconsin idea, mm-hmm. which is that the university exists as something to serve the broader public and something that engages with the broader public. And I think that's something that we've really seen in action here at the UW-Madison encampment. We've seen community members show up to both provide support, but also to, you know, participate in the encampment, to, you know, help share their knowledge, to share their history. You know, many people in the community were alums of UW-Madison and can share their experience, you know, in protests when they were a student. We have many people who have lived in Madison for a long time and can share what the history in Madison was, their experiences with other protests and other politics in Madison. So I want to encourage, like, this space that we've constructed here in the at the Popular University for Gaza, as we call the encampment, this is a space for us to build the kind of community that the administration of UW-Madison often makes it difficult to create.
Mm-hmm. All right, Eli has a question.
Yeah, I said, I think you highlighted a lot of important things about, you know, student-led protests and how important student-led protests have been in enacting change. One of the common critiques I've seen, you know, online and other ways is, you know, people critiquing, you know, basically saying, you know, there's rules against camping on campus. If these students would just follow the rules, there wouldn't be, you know, this backlash or this police violence. You know, what do you say to people who, you know, critique the ways about you go about protesting with this encampment and the validity of your actions?
Yeah, I mean, I think that reading of the situation is completely detached from the history of how political change happens both in this country and globally. I don't think that really traces back. And I think the thing to keep in mind is that if there was a way to get change that followed the rules, we would have done it already. If there was a path to liberation for Palestine that followed all of the rules, it would have happened. But I think we have to keep in mind that these rules don't just exist in a vacuum. These rules are created by the administration specifically to provide an avenue to stifle protest. You know, the university celebrates the history of the anti-Vietnam War protests. But those protests occupied buildings. Those protests did not follow the rules. In fact, that was what made them draw national attention. So I think that when we have the emphasis on following the rules, that often is a code for how can we keep the status quo and how can we make these protests something that we can ignore. Which, again, is fundamentally incompatible with the kind of change that we hope to see in the world and that we need to see in the world.
I have a question. And I'm speaking with Dalia Saba. She's with Students for Justice in Palestine, and I really appreciate that you are speaking with the media. But I noticed on some of the rules of Unity or whatever that the group has is that they told people not to talk to the media. And this is something that I also noticed during the George Floyd demonstrations, when even people from WRT who were covering the events were actually, people assaulted them, physically assaulted them, knocked their cameras out of their hands. We all understand how the press can twist things around, but can you kind of explain why that is? What does that mean that they don't want, you don't want people talking to the media?
Yeah, so we do welcome media at our encampment. We have, you know, had many different media stations here. For us, it is to keep people safe, because I think when it comes to Palestine specifically, we have seen so many, not just far-right media, but also mainstream media deliberately twist people's words. And so we just want to make sure that when people talk to the media, they understand how talking to the media is different than just talking to a friend. The other thing is that we just want to make sure that we are looking out for people, and that they know when they're talking to the media, and that, yeah, so I think that we are working to train more people to know how to talk to media safely, mm-hmm. And know how to communicate effectively. So it is not to silence our engagements with media, rather just to make sure that when we do talk to media, we're, you know, making sure that we represent ourselves as we intend to.
All right. Dolly, can you just let our listeners know what's a plan? What's a plan for today? What's a plan for this, you know, tomorrow and this weekend with the encampment?
Yeah. So, yeah, as I mentioned earlier, we're planning to meet with the university very shortly with some student representatives and some faculty representatives to discuss what we can do to move forward with these demands. But with regards to the encampment, we again plan to be out here until we see that the university is meeting our demands.
Okay. I want to thank you very much for being on the show. And definitely something that we're going to continue to follow. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a good one.
All right. It's 8:27. In a minute, we're going to be speaking with Melissa Smith, Friends of Wisconsin Wolves. There is wolf news. Day 29. Hey, good. Melissa Smith, are you there?
Hey, Tony, how's it going?
It's good. It's very good to hear from you. It's been a while.
Good to hear from you, too.
All right. Well, speaking with Melissa Smith from Friends of Wisconsin Wolves and amongst other animals, there's a lot to talk about and some
there
recent developments.
Is a lot to talk about.
Well, what's the most important to you right now that you think we should be paying
attention?
Right now,
we've been getting a lot of calls that, you know, Congress, the U.S. House of Representatives has passed a bill delisting gray wolves all across the lower United States. Excuse me real quick. And people are pretty scared, pretty freaked out about it. Of course, it's not great news. We don't love it, but I think there's no time to, no need to panic yet. I think, you know, it is Lauren Boebert and Tom Tiffany. So with that being said, the bill's pretty ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And we do have assurance from the White House that they do not support this kind of legislation. So that's really good.
Oh, really? That's good. Because yeah. I was going to wonder, it still has to go through the Senate, but did it look like the Senate would also approve of delisting gray wolves?
Well, I don't know. I mean, the Senate's been bipartisan on the issue.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay, but you said don't worry about that too much. Well, then
I said don't worry about it. Not worry about it. Stranger things have happened, like Trump becoming president. So, you know, anything can happen. But I think don't panic today. It would still have to go through the Senate and still go to Biden's desk.
That would be weird if Donald Trump ever became president of this country, wouldn't it?
Just
could you imagine that,
today?
That reality TV show, sorry?
Right.
Wouldn't that be weird?
It would be very weird.
Well, I don't know. I don't want to just talk about pop culture, but everybody is talking about the governor of South Dakota there.
She likes dogs, doesn't she? Shooting
her goat, and then she like killed three horses.
Yeah.
Just
that's
in the
who
last
these people are.
That was
I mean,
just in the last
are.
Month.
I mean, she has a wolf coat too, so what does that tell you?
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, I mean, is that something we should be paying attention to or what?
I would think so. I mean, more people like dogs and cats than a Republican or Democrat, so I would think that's something that could unify us, that we don't shoot dogs when they don't do what we want. But, you know, that this is who this party is. They really are. It's who wolf hunters are, and that's how they treat their hound dogs when they're hounding here in Wisconsin. This is who they are. So it doesn't surprise me. It didn't surprise me in the least. I remember Huckabee, like, and his son and animal abuse, Brett Favre and his animal abuse, Hunter Nation. I mean, this is a pretty consistent theme.
I don't know. You lost me with Brett Favre.
He drowned a deer by hand and thought it was funny.
Oh, dang.
Yeah, he's a big poacher.
Well, anyhow, what else is going on? Yeah? Hello?
Oh, yeah, and I was just going to say, if I'm sure people have been following the story, kind of ties into what you're talking about with the governor, with the Wyoming wolf story, where a guy tortured a wolf for many, many hours, took it to a bar. I don't even want to go into the details because it'll upset people so much. But again, like, this is who they are. This is who you'd be delisting, you know, delisting wolves into. So I just want to reiterate how important it is that we get, you know, state law and change state law, change the mandate for wolf hunting here, because running over a wolf with a snowmobile, taking it to the bar all day, and beating it to death, apparently, is wolf hunting. The guy only got a $250 fine. So that isn't much different here in Wisconsin. And we've got lots and lots of reports of hunters using snowmobiles to at least disable, if not kill, wolves in our hunt. I mean, 230 wolves in 3 days wasn't done by calling in a gun and a rifle on foot. So I think it's something to really think about, like, who are these people, and what does our, you know, what does our agency allow?
Well,
and
you
we
know,
have an opportunity to change things again.
But you know what? You know what's getting those guys? Global warming, because there hasn't been no snow up there for them guys to get on their snowmobiles.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. Yeah. I don't really want to take the risk.
All right.
If it's not that, it's ATVs, right? I mean, do the same amount of damage.
All right. What else? What else is happening? What's going on with Friends of Wisconsin Wolves? How can people get involved? How can people...
Oh, yeah, we're hanging. You can go to www.wisconsinwolvesandwildlife.org, and the Wisconsin is just WI. So WIwolvesandwildlife.org.
Okay.
There's going to be a lot coming up very soon, so it's going to be a busy summer yet again.
Okay. Well, what's going to be coming up?
Oh, Endangered Species Day is coming up in May. We've got our court case is being heard on Monday, so we'll see how that goes. Just lots of things. An election that might change with Fair Maps, where maybe we'll get some more wildlife positive steps in the right direction. So certainly meeting and thinking about what those steps might be if things change. When, you know, I know the Republicans are a little scared, so that makes me kind of happy. Who knows? I'm hoping for the best.
All right. Well, do you think the upcoming elections and the redrawn maps are going to have a positive effect on to the benefit
certainly
of
certainly going
to
have a positive effect on animals. No doubt about it. No doubt about it.
Okay. All right, Melissa.
I want to thank you
very much, and keep me posted because you know I got my mind on a lot of things. I don't know.
Will do. And shout out to my dad. It's his birthday today.
All right. Happy birthday, Dad.
Yay, 70.
Oh, that was a big one.
Great. All right. Take care,
thanks, Tony.
All right. We'll see.
Bye.
Happy birthday, Mr. Smith.
All right.
All right. Eli. I think we have some music to play in, and Lily Lux is here. She's got a very important announcement.
In the building.
I don't even know what it is, but we'll find out in a minute.
Thank you.
It's 8:39. You are tuned in to WORT 89.9 FM in Madison, Wisconsin. This is a Thursday, 8 o'clock buzz. And joining me in the studio is Lily Lux. You may remember Lily because she protested for bodily autonomy for 463 days around the state capitol. She raised over $30,000 to assist people with their medical needs and to travel outside of Wisconsin to seek medical care. Lily, it's great to see you, and
I always love coming in. Thank you.
All right. So when you told me these numbers as far as how many days you had been doing this, right. I'm like, wow.
Well, I mean,
what is it about? What did it feel like? I mean,
it was very taxing. Honestly, it was nice to finally take a break for my sort of mental health. It was very much an undertaking, like just constantly every day going, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to keep spreading awareness and talking about how people with uteruses don't have rights for health care in our state. And this is unacceptable. I started doing it after Roe v. Wade was overturned, and I just kept showing up. There were some days I obviously didn't, I wasn't able to personally show up every day. I think I did about, 385 of the.
You were allowed to call in sick. Right?
Oh, well, I had someone still showed up in my stead. So okay. In many ways, the protests continued, but I wasn't always able to show up. And actually, I think the first day I wasn't was on like a snowy blizzard day in December, and I put a call out and. I had a state employee, a county employee, and a city employee who were out on the streets or had to show up for work that day, even though most people were staying home. Mm-hmm. And they went to Forward and participated in the protest in my stead. And I just think that was really good. And it was part of the whole purpose was outreach. I want our community to talk about that half of our population doesn't have control over our bodies. Mm-hmm. That one organ in our bodies is being regulated and is not being served to our needs, to our benefit, to our lives. This is unacceptable. And so every day I showed up was just me trying to inspire and continue the conversation that I should have rights over my body. And yes, I did it in a rather flamboyant, fantastical way, but I thought the imagery of seeing a woman's body, a femme-presenting body, should make you think about why we tell that body you can do this and you can't do this and you will have your needs met or your needs not met. Like, that's unacceptable, and we need to have that conversation every day or things aren't going to get better.
Mm-hmm. Did you record any of this? Did you start to think about recording it after a while?
I would do some live videos while I was out protesting just so people could see what the experience was mm-hmm. like. A lot of people have assumed that it was horrible for me, that I know, and to be fair, I was treated horribly by some people who were very upset by what I was doing. But the majority of my time out there was positive. It was encouraging. People were excited and happy to see me out there doing the work. And so I wanted to share that because most women, you know, like, we get harassed wearing a parka. It doesn't matter what we're wearing. I mean, when we're assaulted, we're asked what we're wearing. So like, this is the world that we have been raised in, and this is what society is. So it's very scary for them to conceptualize being so open and free and feeling safe in that. And so I wanted to share the experience and say, not necessarily to encourage people to do it, but just to say that, like, yes, we can. We don't have to keep hiding, and we need to do more.
So what were you feeling when you finally heard that access to abortion and other health care for women was going to be happening again in Wisconsin?
Relief, but it's still restricted. So, like, there was just, like, a sense of, like, joy and, yes, progress forward. I mean, I protested at Forward, so, like, I mean, it meant everything. I felt it. I felt in so many ways in every cell of my being. But it's still not where it needs to be. It's still restricted. We're still fighting for this. But it definitely allowed me to finally say, okay, I dedicated myself as a performing artist and a protester to do this. But there are other things in the world that interest me. And how what are the best ways for me to be spending my time and energy. I definitely wanted to reconnect with my family and friends and just life. I started hosting parties again a little bit, but I'm still out there. I still want to be involved and still try to raise money for the WMF Wisconsin.
All right. And you also told me you have a big announcement to make. Well, yes, you did tell me. I'm not going to lie about it. So what's going on?
Sort of unplanned. I read about it in the news, but I have decided to throw my hat in the ring for the open Dane County board seat for my district. So that's exciting. I'm sort of...
Wait. Before you go any further, yep. Eli, we forgot to say something.
The views and opinions expressed on the Thursday 8 o'clock buzz do not necessarily represent the opinions of the Wart Ped staff, our board of directors, or our millions of volunteers. The Thursday 8 o'clock buzz is for entertainment purposes only.
So
there.
Okay. All right. Go ahead again. What are you doing? You're going to be applying for a
Right. So it's sort of unusual. We just had an election a few weeks ago, and the board supervisor, Cecily Castillo, was elected for our district. However, that supervisor took a job with the county, so they're unable to be a supervisor for the area.
Okay.
So there will be an appointment made by the board chair, Patrick Miles. There is a public hearing tonight. I actually don't know who the
Are you going to be there?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yeah, it's all of the interested parties. I don't know who they are.
Do you know where it is or what?
I do. It's at Wingris School Library at 7:30 p.m. tonight. It's a public hearing. If you want to meet, if you live in the area, District 7 basically goes from Vilas down through the Arboretum into Dudgeon Monroe, Westmoreland, Midvale Heights, sort of all that near West Side area.
So, and you'll just get assigned?
Well, it's an appointment. So, okay. I mean, it's kind of like you got to nail the interview. And then, though, even if I don't get the appointment, I have decided when there is the special election, I'm going to continue the effort. If there's one thing I learned about standing out in all sorts of weather and putting my skin in the game protesting, it's that you actually need to be in a position of power to make change. And so I'm going to try that now.
All right. Well, Eli... Write this down, though, because I think we need to contact everybody else who's also running for this position.
Okay.
And we have to interview them.
So it sounds like you have to go to this board hearing.
No, but we got it. yeah. No, I'm not going to be able to make it.
But that's all.
Okay. Well, that's but
so what? What was the big motivation behind this? Kind of, what are the local issues? What are the things that kind of make you feel like, you know? Obviously, the bodily autonomy is what you're most known for politically, but kind of, what are the other issues that are motivating for you along these lines?
Sure. So I have an unusual position that my day job is that I actually work at the Dane County Courthouse. Mm-hmm. So I'm a state employee who works in a county building. So I see what our employees are dealing with, what our facilities are. And then obviously I work in court, so the criminal justice reform is a huge thing that I see. It's my everyday job. It's what I spend my life doing most of the time. So I definitely have some insight and I think a unique perspective on those areas. And I just based on my work, a regular lay person, I just have a lot more breadth. I mean, I work as a court reporter, so I deal with procedures and legal things. And one of the things I actually looked at was the ordinances for this position, because I really wasn't entirely clear what the board oversees and things.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of gendered language in the ordinances, which, if you're going to be welcoming to the queer community and be a sanctuary, as you claim, for transgender and non-binary people, it's not just going on record and saying, yes, we won't prosecute you for like pursuing gender affirming care. You need to create a welcoming space. I mean, that's what I did in the community as a safe space promoter. So using gendered language, still having gender defined in our Dane County ordinances as male and female. I mean, this is just not the world that it would be welcoming to someone like me. I'm a non-binary queer person. So just little things like changing his and her to they, while it's not like the biggest thing, you know, our most pressing matter to our county, it is really important to my community to actually make us feel safe and seen. So like things like that I would like to work on, plus just, you know, be a good ally for a lot of the BIPOC members who are facing issues on the board. So,
mm-hmm. All right. So what do you think about what's going on campus right now with the Gaza encampment?
Yeah, I actually stopped by there last night on my way home because I've been supportive of it, and it seemed like it was really just a peaceful thing. It was great. And then I saw all of the violence and arrests that happened yesterday morning. So I wanted to see how everyone was feeling and just offer words of encouragement to the folks out there, because I know what it's like to kind of commit to a very, a specific long-term protest. And everyone was very still going at it. The tents are back up. Everyone seemed fine. Everyone was just doing their thing. And
it's been all quiet so far.
All quiet, except for yesterday morning. If you've seen the videos and the information, that was not quiet.
Yes. All right. Well, Lily, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll be following what's going on, and I guess we'll have to call whoever else is running for this assigned position. Yeah, maybe not. I don't know.
We'll find out tonight. I literally don't know. It's not, because it's not really an election. It's an appointment process.
And again, what time is that? If people want to meet you from that district, I'm not going to go there, because then I would be, I'm an outsider. So.
It's at Wingra School Library, off Monroe Street, at 7:30 p.m. tonight.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Eli, I think we're going to have to get the captain and get some weather.
What's going on with the weather, Tony?
I have no idea, but hopefully I'll have it.
Hopefully somebody does.
Somebody's like trying to get a hold of me. Yeah. In a minute, everyone, Captain Seto. Say 53, you are tuned into WORT 89.9 FM in Madison, Wisconsin. Joining me on the line, it's been a long time since we've had any good weather around here, but it's time for the captain. What's going on?
Yeah, batten down the hatches, gang. Supposedly today, an inch and a half of rain is coming in with possible hail and damaging winds.
What time is that happening?
This afternoon.
Okay. All right.
I haven't looked at the hourly here. Anyway, other than that, you know, which sounds kind of, if you live between Division and Blair Street on the Isthmus, you might want to get out your sandbags, but who knows. Anyway, the...
That's where I live, Captain.
Well, they've changed. My understanding is they've increased the size of the storm sewers, so there's less likelihood of flooding. But that whole area between Blair and Division used to be 1 mile-long marsh between the two lakes. And occasionally, since the water level is up in Mendota because of the inhabitants of Maple Bluff don't like to have mudflats in front of their estate, it floods. every once in a while if you get enough rain. But anyway, enough social history. Anyway, after today, it looks absolutely spectacular down there. Highs in the lowest high I see in the next week is about 70, and it's between 70 and 75 for at least the next week or so. So, yeah, other than today, which sounds kind of nasty, the weather looks really pleasant.
Oh, really? What about tomorrow morning?
Tomorrow morning, it's going to get down to, let me see here. Tomorrow morning, it'll get down into the mid-40s, probably 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, but it's going to get up to 75 tomorrow. And so I would imagine, unless your tea time is at 4:30 in the morning, as dawn breaks, it should be warm enough to play golf.
Well, that's the only time they let me play, Captain, because it's the only time I can get on the course. You can play for free before 5 a.m., that's what people say. As long as you don't get caught.
Yeah, as long as you don't get caught and you get done before it gets light on.
Yeah,
that's all. I just want to know if it's going to rain or not. No rain tomorrow.
No, it rains today. It's going to be very soggy. I mean, if we get an inch and a half of rain, you're not going to want to be on. I'm not sure the greenskeepers are going to want you on those greens for a while till they dry out. But anyway, that's a whole other story.
All right. Well, Captain, there is a lot to talk about. It's been a while, several weeks since you've been on, but... How many dogs have you shot?
The story is what's going on downtown.
What's that?
You know, with the encampments, both in Madison and Milwaukee and across the country. And as far as I'm concerned, we're watching full-blown fascism. I mean, anytime you have the peaceful assembly for the redress of grievances by a population who are opposed to a particular policy by the state, and the state is coming in and violating the First Amendment by clearing the commons and beating on people, that's fascism. And you can deny it all you want if you're a white moderate, but it's still fascism.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's state law that you can't set up an encampment on a college campus or any state property.
Well, who passed that law?
Oh, okay. I'm just stating that. That's their argument.
That's their justification. And as far as I'm concerned, if Mayor Satya and Captain Vanilla are authorizing this, they're what I call quislings for genocide. The state has come out and said, we are going to continue our racist policies of racist predatory imperialism in Palestine, and if you don't like it, you're going to get beat over the head with a baton.
All right. That's today's weather report from Captain Seto. Well, that's good. Thank you very much.
I'm sorry if I'm a little harsh, but I think in order for us to rise up, in order for us to change the system, we have to see what the political landscape actually looks like.
Okay.
And I think we are looking at full-blown fascism in this country emerging, and it's not just the Republicans that are responsible for this. There is bipartisan agreement that fascism is more acceptable than popular democracy as far as the owners are concerned, and that's where we're headed.
And how do people fight that, Captain, in 30 seconds or less?
What they're doing and just keep coming out. Like, I would suggest that everybody that can get a hold of the book by Nick Vanderpoy called Water Protectors, which deals with the help camp and the Pinocchi struggle. I mean, there are ways for grassroots populism to fight back against the state using humor and nonviolence and creativity to push back against the emergent fascism. I don't know what else to say. I think John Lennon's right, that if you use violence against the state, that the state knows how to deal with violence. You have to try and come up with other solutions. I don't know what exactly they are. I'm not Vladimir Lenin or Che or Mao, so who knows? But that's what we need to be doing.
Captain. So what's the weather going to be like for the rest of the week?
Rain. It looks like a very severe significant and perhaps severe thunderstorms later this afternoon. And after that, the weather's going to be great.
Right.
You know, it's highs in the low to mid-70s for at least the next week or so.
Captain, thank you so much. And it's great to talk to you, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, I'm sorry if I get a little hot, but things are getting bad.
All right, man. We all understand. Thank you.
Thank you, Bert.
Darn it, Jeff. I was trying to get done on time.
We almost did.
Having a good sense of humor about that. I want to thank Lily Lux and Melissa Smith and also Dahlia Sabo for being on the show. Eli, thank you very much. Good job.
Hey, good job, Tony.
Yeah, Peggy Mike and who else?
Mary Lou
on the phones. Yeah. Stay tuned for Hajira, almost on time.
Hey, that should be our motto.
WRT 89.9 FM in Madison, Wisconsin. So you don't have to do that.
The 8 o'clock buzz, almost on time.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Thursday, May 2nd.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1830. That was the birthday of Richard Trevelyan, one of the early leaders of the U.S. labor movement and the fight for the 8-hour workday. Of English descent, Richard was the son of a Cornish farmer. As a young man, Trevelyan took up the trade of a ship carpenter. Soon after, he traveled to Australia to seek his fortune and to prospect for gold. The horrible working conditions caused him to speak out for workers in Australia and New Zealand before arriving in the United States. First, he came to New Orleans, where he became involved in the trade union movement. When the Civil War broke out, he traveled north. In 1862, he settled in Detroit, working in the Detroit Dry Docks. Soon after, Richard became president of the Ship Carpenters and Caulkers International Union. He was well known as an eloquent speaker for the cause of labor. He founded the Detroit Trades Assembly. A short-lived organization, the assembly attempted to bring together skilled tradesmen to organize for improved working conditions and hours. His skills as an orator often put Trevelyan in high demand in the nearby city of Chicago. On the 4th of July celebration held by the Chicago Trades Assembly, in 1965, Trevelyan called for the 8-hour workday. In his speeches, Trevelyan advocated that workers should not see a reduction of pay for working 8 hours. Instead, he argued that increased productivity of